This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today for our call-in show are Michael Wyatt, Chief of the Civil and Public Works Branch of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the Honolulu District. He oversees federal water resources development projects throughout the state of Hawaii and the Pacific Islands. Linda Wong is a resident of the Diamond Head area and a member of the Diamond Head Neighborhood Board. And Kahi Pakaro is the Executive Director of the environmental group Sustainable Coastlines Hawaii. Welcome to you all today. We are talking about the future of the Alawai Canal in the watershed area. Michael White, if we could start with you, what's the snapshot with the EIS and the funding for this project?
Sure. Well, this has been a long time in the making. The study itself was started about 20 years ago. In 1998, they first started looking at the Alawai watershed. It started out as a watershed study. Where basically the Corps of Engineers has an authority where we're not necessarily focused on building a project. We're just focused on trying to gather stakeholders together and lead a process by which we can come up with a plan to improve the watershed. During that time, in 2004, there was a major flood in Manoa. And then in 2006, there was a major flood in Makiki. And essentially what ended up happening is the study morphed from a watershed study into a combined ecosystem restoration and flood risk management study. That continued on for a number of years. And then in 2012, Congress basically put a mandate on us for these studies that had been going on for years and years, wrap them up and complete those in 3 years. And so basically, we had to prioritize, and we got our stakeholders together and decided to focus on flood risk management. So the study has since morphed into just solely this flood risk management project. And in 2017, we had approval at an agency level to submit a recommendation to Congress, and that's been submitted to Congress. Now, since that time, Congress has basically come back with a law that was approved in February. That said, it was really targeted at hurricane damage relief for the Gulf Coast and the East Coast and Texas and Puerto Rico. And part of that, they also included a caveat for states that had had more than one disaster event since 2014.
And that's us.
And that's Hawaii. So basically, there's been a federal disaster declaration declared on almost every major island, the big four. Kauai, Oahu, Maui, and the Big Island since 2014. So we qualified for that. And then they looked at what Corps of Engineers projects have been approved, and Alawai came up. So now funding has been set aside, about $345 million for the design and implementation of the Alawai Canal project itself. And I like to think of the project as really 11 separate projects. There's a series of detention basins in the upper watershed, and then there's a line of defense in the form of a flood wall that's basically planned around the Alawai Canal. So the general idea is slow the water down from the watershed as it drains down towards the Alawai Canal, and then provide that storage that prevents the water from leaving the banks of the Alawai Canal and going out into the surrounding areas and flooding the urban areas.
And Kahi, I know your concern is the coastlines and what we see come down from the mountains into the ocean.
Yeah, so from our standpoint, what we've seen out on the coastlines is trash coming in from all around the Pacific Rim. And looking at us in Hawaii, not a lot of it is actually from us on the east side of the islands. And with the Alawai Canal being more or less a gateway for Waikiki, we saw a way for the community or the state of Hawaii, for that matter, to lead by example and show all these visitors how we can manage our solid waste problem. A lot of us have seen all the trash washing out of the Alawai into the ocean. It's a lot. It's hundreds of thousands of pounds every year. And we do a very poor job at managing it right now, and I know we can do better. So we launched a program to implement a trash water wheel to install at the end of the Alawai to catch about 98% of the solid waste going through and out to sea. A lot of people have seen it in the harbor, but it eventually makes its way out into the ocean, and it's our contribution to the North Pacific Garbage Patch. So our goal was to get that installed, and we're still working on that with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the State Department of Health. But that's why we're here. We want to lead by example, have other visitors from around the world realize, hey, if Hawaii's doing this, maybe we can implement something where we're from. And when they do that, then we start seeing minimization of plastic pollution on our own coastlines here in Hawaii.
So really, the canal could be an opportunity to set up as a model for everybody if we do it right.
And at the same time, it would stop the main flow of our own trash entering into the oceans, and it ends up right into our harbor. And we have hotels right there and visitors and people living in there. It's an eyesore, and we want to do something about it.
And Linda, you live in the Waikiki area. You're on the neighborhood board. The board has not taken up this issue.
No.
So these are just your private views as a citizen.
As a citizen living in the area, we have a lot of discussion about, we have the top golf coming in the neighborhood, and then we also are aware of the plans for the detention basins. We know there's several plans for that. But also we're aware of the failure of the foam ban that just went through failure after I'm a member of the Sierra Club and the Surf Rider. So we'd like to see that pass, or I would.
But your concern, I think, has been also the visual blight.
Yes, well, there's a visual blight of that four-foot wall that was at the EIS meeting. I've never seen as many people come to a meeting. I saw every advocate that I've known on this island for decades come to that meeting. Everybody showed up for that. The idea of a four-foot wall that's a solid concrete block of several different stacks. The Alawai is the last remaining viewplane that I know of that in the Honolulu area that's almost mesmerizing, even though we have the traffic. I just came across the Alawai, and there was a policeman way over on the right-hand lane behind a slow-going truck on purpose, just so he could go slow and watch the water. You know, and I've talked to people. I've been talking to people lately, and a lot of issues about the Alawai. And, you know, all those people that came to that meeting in 2015, they all came because they didn't want to see those cement blocks. And I've seen lately somewhere, somebody had it, they had one that looked like lava rocks. I don't know where that came from, but somebody had a visual prototype somewhere.
Right, so this would be a big change if there is a wall on either one or both sides of the canal, and people just kind of need to, I guess, process it and wrap their heads around what this would like what would look like. The canal is a popular area for the canoe paddlers, you know.
Right,
folks enjoy being able to see that, and so that's
we
obviously
like seeing
one of the
them.
Concerns.
Yes, and to see it is blend in. It's got to blend in with things that are there now. It has to be heritage style, Hawaiian style. It can't be new wave or glass or like the convention center or anything like that.
So as far as this funding, it's working its way through the budget, and we'll kind of see how that goes, because the way I understand it, the city owns the canal, the state's responsible for the walls of the canal, and if the feds are able to come up with some of the money, there still has to be some cost sharing.
Oh, absolutely. So there's a 65% federal, 35% non-federal cost share required for this. The interesting thing about this law that was passed in February is it's something completely new for the Corps of Engineers, in the sense that it says that basically there's 100% federal funding for the project up front, and that's what's been set aside for the project, $345 million. Then there's a 30-year payback period. And we've had that discussion with the state and the city county. It still remains to be seen who exactly would be the non-federal sponsor on this. But we would need a non-federal sponsor to move forward and agree to provide that cost share and also the lands for the project. So we don't do anything unilaterally, so we have to have other partners at the table as well.
Right, and we did ask the city and county and also the Department of Land and Natural Resources to weigh in on this. I think they were a little nervous because they have lots of questions yet about how this funding thing is going to work out. So they declined our offer.
Yeah, and I can't blame them for that, because to be frank, the announcement of the funding came in advance of the implementation guidance for how all it was how it was going to work with all the details. So we're still asking those questions ourselves. We hope to have answers on that in the near future.
Yeah, and also like with the 11 projects that you have envisioned, we're hoping that you could add one more to that, and that would be the solid waste side. As Sustainable Coastlines, we're also part of the Olloway Watershed Partnership. It's this collaborative group of different stakeholders from business, nonprofit, and the community. And we come together and we discuss the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' plans, the community's concerns and whatnot. And it's a great place for people that want to get to learn more. If you're a stakeholder, come and get involved with that. We'd really love you guys to come in and present to us as well there.
And any thoughts, Linda, just from a resident's point of view?
Well, I talked to quite a few people knowing that I was coming here, and a lot of people are concerned with all the debris that are at the mouth of the Olloway. And what Kahi just said about you're having a wheel at the – people are concerned with that being cleaned out periodically, because it said that there's a wide path there for the canoers to go out, and that maybe like a maintenance program to have it cleaned out periodically. And because that's one of our I used to live on the Olloway, and it was beautiful, and we don't see that many. I mean, the Olloway is not in that beautiful a shape as it used to be, but to see them out there as part of, there's your tourists, you know, your money, your economic engine there is the beauty of Hawaii. That's killing the golden egg, you know, is to not keep that beautiful. But also the cleaning the streams that come down from Palolo and the Manoa Stream, keeping those streams open and clean all the time. And then also I understand there's a levee or something there at Century Center that comes down when the storms get heavy. So, you know, the community is very aware of all where all these things are and what's going on. It's quite sad. They're quite savvy in Akamai as to what's going on.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a lot of upstream solutions as well that need to be addressed, not just the walls of the Olloway. And I'm sure you're addressing upstream solutions, not just the Olloway.
Right. It's a two-pronged approach. So detention in the upper watershed and then line of protection down at the Olloway Canal. If you look at where the water is coming from, up on the Ko'olau Ridge, they get 150 inches of rain on the top of the ridge every year. Down in Waikiki, there's 20 inches of rain every year. So you can see where the water is coming from. So you have to manage the water in the watershed before it gets down to the Olloway Canal. We looked at what would happen if we didn't do any detention in the watershed, and we would have ended up with 12-foot walls around the Olloway Canal. And obviously that's not going to be acceptable to anyone. But to the debris issue, one of the things that's included in these detention basins are bollards, which are designed to intercept some of the albizia debris and other vegetative debris and rocks and things like that that flow down the streams. And that was one of the major drivers for the Manoa flood, too, is all that debris moved with the water and basically got caught up on the Woodlawn Bridge and caused some of that flooding.
Right, and that flooding really was very devastating to the University of Hawaii. It went down in the basement. There were students studying at the time. I remember seeing the water marks on the walls. I mean, just incredible damage, and they had to move their computer systems up above in the power systems. It just really showed the vulnerability. So it was a really kind of an important red flag that went up.
Right, and that's one of the really unique things about this watershed in Hawaii in general is with the topographic change that you have, basically the watershed goes from 3,000 feet to zero in about 4 miles. So the water just rushes off those hillsides and can really turn into flooding incredibly fast. And basically we can see flooding in the Olloway Canal within 45 minutes of a storm event. So that doesn't give you a whole lot of time to prepare. You need to have those measures in place to manage a flood before it happens. It's not like you can go put sandbags out and prevent flooding from happening because you just don't have the time to do that.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about the Ulloa Canal. You can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. I know there are plans to use the Ulloa Golf Course as a part of this whole solution. Explain that.
So basically the golf course floods right now. If there's even a minor storm event, the Ulloa Canal only has about a 5-year capacity within it itself. So anyone who lives in that area knows that when you get a major rain event, the water leaves the banks of the canal and floods out local park areas, including the golf course. So the golf course, the plan for that area is to basically have a levee that goes around the perimeter that allows it to continue to flood. But contains some of that flooding. And then we would look at putting in a detention basin within the golf course itself to try to store some of that water to allow the floodwaters to move out to the ocean until the floodwaters recede.
Okay. And Kahi, I know you are going to be leaving us. You've got to go to a meeting at noon. But is there anything else from the environmental point of view that that you have any concerns about the watershed?
Primarily, it's the solid waste and people being like, okay, we just need to catch it. Well, there's a lot easier solution. And you mentioned it a little bit about the foam ban.
Yes.
It's really about us just, like, stop using this stuff that ends up clogging our storm drains, et cetera.
Yes.
Trash that enters into our storm drains eventually makes into a stream, into a river, mm-hmm. out to the Ulloa and out into the ocean. What if we just never created it in the first place? And that's why we were really excited to see the foam ban go through, which we thought was and then was killed behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Whole nother show.
mm-hmm.
These types of actions are what we need. And if we can't rely on the government to do it, we as consumers need to really just stand up and take those choices to stop the upstream problems of plastic pollution right where it starts.
So you're really calling on people to just be personally responsible.
And not just people, the businesses as well. Like, you know, like why do we want to get a poke bowl in a styrofoam or Hawaiian plate in styrofoam? Like, let's get back to being one of the most, if not the most sustainable culture in the history of man, and get back to using compostable products where if it does get into a stream or whatnot, it biodegrades and it's not going to hurt our watershed.
And Linda, I know you've lived in that area for a long time. You've seen all the things that have ended up in the canal, the
terrible.
Shopping carts.
Yes,
you know.
Shopping carts. Yes, there's all kinds of debris that's in the canal. Surfrider Association has a foundation, has a styrophobia program that's quite good, and the restaurants go earth-friendly, and there's several earth-friendly programs now. It's just like not having straws. What do we need them for? Their main cafeteria goes through 180,000 straws a day, you know, and what is it, Starbucks is going to have their lids now that you can drink it from the lid instead of using a straw. I mean, a straw is just a measly example. But I've worked in the food industry for all my life, you know, 40 years. And you can have a coated piece of cardboard that is, you can have your poke or whatever in hot food, liquid gravy. So, and it won't leak. You can stack them. I was there when they made that decision on the foam ban. And there was 3 hours of positive testimony. The idea to shelve that bill was horrendous. But, you know, if we just don't use them.
And the Surfrider Foundation, it's called the Ocean Friendly Restaurants.
Yes,
and they have these stamps on their restaurants as well. So as consumers, we can patronize them and use them versus people that are continuing to create the solid waste that ends up clogging our Ulloa.
So you see it as really a broad approach
huge.
To this, not just flood control, but also personal responsibility for what goes up, what goes into the water. At the end of the day,
it doesn't all go into the hydro, whatever, you know, it doesn't get burned. It doesn't. It goes into the landfill.
And because Michael, if you could explain, I know you talked about the money that's in the budget now, that you're really concerned with building the capacity of the canal. And if there are concerns about the view planes and the wall, that there might be a solution for maybe raising the land around it. Talk about that.
Sure. Yeah, and like Linda mentioned, we had a public meeting in 2015 as part of the public review of the EIS. And we heard a lot of concerns about the viewscapes in the area. And we heard that loud and clear. We understand that. And one of the things that I've communicated to the state and the city county is, from a technical standpoint, to me, it matters on what's on the waterward side of the wall. We need that capacity in the canal in order to manage the floodwater. But it doesn't matter to me from a technical standpoint what's on the landward side of the wall. So if the sidewalks were raised, if the streets were raised to preserve that viewscape, that seems like a win-win. Obviously, there's an investment there. It wouldn't necessarily be part of the federal project, so that would be a decision that would have to be made at the local level.
Right. So that would be expensive. I mean, it's a great idea when you think about the sea level rise and the threats to Waikiki, our economic engine. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, who's going to pay for it?
Who pays for it? That's a very good question. And from my standpoint, being from a younger generation, it's like we look at what could potentially happen and the mitigating factors that need to be taken, such as potentially building a wall. In a sense, it is what it is. You know, it's like what we do beyond that to preserve our viewplanes. That's gravy. Like, what we really should be worrying about is avoiding this 100-year flood that could pretty much inundate that entire community. If it's preserving our tourism economy, if we don't do anything, it's going to be really bad. In a sense, I'm somewhat advocating for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and their work that they've done to figure out what needs to be done. But then at the same time, I'm advocating the community, saying, okay, well, if this is what has to be done, how do we do it in a way that minimizes its impact on the beauty, and how do we preserve what we have? And if we have to sacrifice, well, hey, we have to sacrifice.
If the solution involves raising the land around the canal, there are the questions of, well, okay, does the tourism industry help with some of that cost? I know the city and county of Honolulu has that directive out to consider the sea level rise with the design going forward, what we're going to need to do to protect our communities. But it certainly is a conversation that needs to be started.
Well, as an ex-developer, I already noticed a lot of the new buildings going up have taken this into account. You know, they've raised their first floors are like 20 feet tall. Like, that's not necessary. It means you're eating up revenue that could have been approached. But they're mitigating the fact that they're realizing there's going to be these instances where water is going to inundate. So the developer's already thinking about it. The city and county is starting to think about it. But how do we mitigate it to a point where we still also protect the tourism economy and potentially have them invest into preserving these viewplanes?
And Michael, if the thought is potentially one wall or another or both, if you have one wall, what about the backwash? Let's say something does, you know, crest on the other side, and then you've got that whole community on the other end across Kapi'olani, a lot of those two-story walk-ups. You know, there's a concern about, loss of life potentially.
Right. Well, I think what you're referring to is called interior flooding. So if you have a wall there and you're basically preventing water from running down into the canal from the landward side, you have to have some way to drain that, right? So along with the project are two pump stations, and they're fairly large pump stations that are in place to try to address this interior drainage issue. Because basically the storm sewers aren't going to function when the canal is full. And so the general idea is that the pump stations intercept the drainage and then pump the water up and over the wall. So that's our mitigative measure for that particular issue.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions. I was going to ask about the pump stations because it was, I think, six pump stations before, and the community was dead set against that. Are they still at the Diamond Head end of the Alawai?
That's right. There's one adjacent to Kapahulu, and then one that's located more over towards the Manoa Palolo Drainage Canal.
And what's the effect on the schools that are close by there? You've got Iolani School and the Alawai Elementary that are right up there.
Right.
Against that.
Right.
Backside.
And one of the comments that we received during the public review period, I know Iolani School in particular was fairly concerned because there wasn't a wall in front of Iolani School, and they were advocating for that. We looked at that multiple times. Unfortunately, the criteria that we use would not allow us to include that in a recommended plan. Basically, we are obligated to look at the economic criteria where anything that we build, the benefits have to exceed the costs. And that whole area in particular, while it's been in a mapped floodplain area since the 1970s, as that campus has developed, certain buildings have been raised, brought out of the floodplain, and therefore, you know, when you look at the economics of what gets damaged in a flood, those things aren't getting damaged. But to the benefit of that area, we do point out that the flood stages, because of the basins in the upper watershed, will be about 2 feet lower, just based on the effect of the detention basins slowing down the water in that area. So there's a significant beneficial effect from those detention basins, even without a wall in place. And if a wall were to be constructed in that area, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. It's just not something that we can recommend as a federal investment, that's all.
You mean a wall in that area on the other side of the canal? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it would be on the Eva side of the Manoa-Palolo Drainage Canal.
In front of Iolani School.
Right. Okay. Now, on the communities at that time were really adamant that, and the UH had a committee and they did a lot of work on this. They thought that a berm by the Alawai School would be enough. And if you put a wall on the Alawai School side, that's fine. But I don't think that it being any kind of wall will really fly with the community. I mean, you can't put one over there that's concrete and square and it's 8 feet tall. You know what I mean? It can't be just any kind. It has to be something that's aesthetic and within reasonable parameters.
Right.
So I would sort of steer you away from making it can be any kind of wall. You know?
I think one of the main concerns was that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers were just going to come in and build this wall without any community input. So I think the basis that we're getting at is, hey, listen to us, the community, when we start before we put a shovel in the ground.
Right. Understood. And, you know, I mean, like I say, there's a long history to this of community involvement in the overall project. At the end of the day, you know, what we've tried to communicate is we're obligated to implement the least cost alternative that achieves the function of the project. However, this is a historic district that we're working in, and we need to work hand in hand. We've got a programmatic agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office to basically preserve the historic character of the area. So we'll be working hand in hand with them to design that wall in a way that's acceptable to them and also meets the compliance criteria of the National Historic Preservation Act.
Well, I'd just like to say my hat's off to you for this idea of raising the Alawai Street and that side of, you know, kudos. That is really good. And the money that it would take to even to envision that and bring it up to the state and city is really, really good. So,
well, I can't claim credit for anything because it's going
to
be their decision.
To bring it here to the table is really good, and that's really good.
If you're just joining us, our guests in our studio are Michael Wyatt, Chief of the Civil and Public Works Branch of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Kahi Picaro, Executive Director of Sustainable Coastlines Hawaii, and Diamond Head resident and neighborhood board member Linda Wong. We are talking about the Alawai Canal, and if you'd like to join the conversation, you could call us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from their neighbor islands. Maybe you have an experience about the floods that we were talking about in Manoa and Makiki that you'd like to share, or just recently with the heavy flooding that we saw on Kalanianiole Highway. Obviously, we saw situations with flooding on Kauai. So it's an issue that we really have to grapple with and understand what's the solution going forward. And Katya, I know you are going to have to leave us shortly, but any other thoughts that you might have just about what we need to focus on as we start or continue this conversation?
Yeah, I think it's the collaboration side, just really listening to all the stakeholders involved. And as a stakeholder, regardless on what side you're on, it comes to compromise. So none of us are going to get exactly what we want, and we have to just work together to get a solution that's going to keep the 100-year flood from ruining Waikiki. In addition, from our organization, we are going to be installing a C-bin. It's a smaller contraption that collects solid waste in a collaboration with the Waikiki Yacht Club later this fall. And that's going to start getting a better understanding of exactly what's washing down the watershed and hopefully being able to identify where it's coming from and find those points of pollution and address it further upstream, hopefully mitigating some of the damage that the solid waste is doing by stopping it at its source.
And you really would like to have done some of this stuff like years ago, right? You want to see action.
Yeah, we launched the crowdfunding campaign. It was about 2.5 years ago, and it got funded in 6 days. We brought out the team to do the feasibility study, and we submitted it to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, went through a permitting process, and then it got bounced back down to the State Department of Health. We've been trying to figure out how to navigate the 401 quality permit, and it's been very difficult. But in the meantime, you know, costs have come down in what it would take to actually implement a trash water wheel or something like it. So before we move forward with our final submission of permit, we're waiting for a few more technologies to come out that would drastically cut the cost of what we want to implement while making it quicker to implement and hopefully get something in there shortly within, say, the next 5 years.
We did have a caller, a shy caller, and left a question. He says, we saw a transparent sound wall in Greece and also in Japan recently. Can the Alawai wall be made transparent? I'm not sure what he was referring to, but.
It's a great question. I think what's proposed right now, and again, you know, this is just for the purposes of estimating the costs of the federal project. What is proposed is a concrete poured wall. There's ways to pour concrete that you can texture it, you can put shapes in it, you can paint it, things like that that can preserve the aesthetics. Would we look at different materials? Maybe, but I think it's fairly safe to say that different materials are probably going to increase the costs. So it'd be a conversation between the federal government and the non-federal sponsor about if there's a desire to do something other than the least cost alternative, they can provide additional funding to do that. And whether or not the state or the city county would be willing to do that is a question for them.
Okay, and we do have a caller on line one. The caller is from Kalihi. Are you on the line there? What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I was listening to the conversation. Came in kind of late, but I was just thinking, you know, Native Hawaiian, what do you call it, have lived, you know, on the Manoha area and dealt with water way before the canal was ever drained, right, to build Waikiki. So I was thinking, as part of the engineering solution, is there like some thought about including like cow farming? There's so many young people that want to return to food sovereignty, trying to actually practice what we once did, you know, the ecological management that Hawaiians had. So I'm thinking there must have been cow fields that were ways of diverting water, holding water. So just to see water in a holding tank makes sense to me, but if that water could be used to grow food or to bring young people, Iolani School, how many high schools are in that area? Marano, Punahou, all within the watershed, to start to look at how do you bring cultural practice and join it to the engineering.
Thank you, Joe, for that question. So, Michael, have there been discussions about that with the basins and somehow working that idea in?
Yeah, so I think the general idea back when this was a watershed study was that we would pursue all kinds of ideas just like that, things to promote sustainability, improve water quality, rely on traditional cultural values, things like that. Since this is morphed into a flood risk management project, the Corps of Engineers isn't necessarily playing a leadership role in that conversation anymore, but there's other folks who are. And one thing that I think that's neat about this particular project is there's a whole list of issues to address in this watershed. Flood risk is just one of them, and I think the caller points out another opportunity. The foundation of the flood risk project is kind of inspiring some of these other conversations happening around the area, from the water wheel to collect trash, to water quality improvements, to the dredging of the canal by the state, things like that. And in Olowai, Watershed Partnership is one of those organizations that is really kind of leading that diversified effort.
And getting back to the dredging, I know we've done it before. And the plan is to do it again because it's time. I mean, the canal is only, you know, so deep, and as sediment comes down there, it builds and creates more of a hazard for the communities that live around that area.
Mm-hmm.
What are your concerns as a resident that lives down there and sees that sediment building?
I think it's supposed to be around every 10 years that we're supposed to dredge it, and it's been over 10 years, right? And they're supposed to dredge it with this project. Correct.
So there is a misperception that's out there, I think, that the Corps of Engineers actually built the Olowai Canal.
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, no, I know you didn't. But I think there's a general perception out there that we did, which would imply that we maintain it over time. But we aren't involved in the dredging other than our regulatory program would issue a permit for it. But the state has taken that on, is my understanding. I can't really speak to what their timeline is or their frequency for dredging, but I know that they've assumed responsibility for that.
I just thought you might have the information.
Oh, sorry.
You don't have the information.
No, I can't speak for the state.
I know as part of this whole dredging project, though, they, you know, because we have seen over the years when we had that terrible sewage break in our sewer lines, they had to use a temporary line down the Olowai. I understand that the Hawaiian Electric has some lines in there as well, and they're in the process of moving that. So it's all kind of tied together, and I think that's been part of the delay is with this plan to move the utility. You know, then you've got to dredge it. And lots of moving parts.
Didn't they make a deal that they could put the electric lines down if they made a bridge?
And I know that there have been lots of ideas about what happens to the Olowai. In the past, there were discussions about doing some kind of a ferry service, you know, to kind of commercialize and take advantage of that recreational area, you know, so it's not just the canoe paddlers that we see every day out there, but maybe another way for visitors and tourists to get another scenic view. And so there are lots of discussions over
and
the decades.
Ancillary projects
right.
in the wind.
Yeah, and, you know, who knows? Maybe that might materialize. I know that there's talk about private and public partnerships in various projects, municipal projects, and maybe that's something that could be worked out down the road. But
if people are concerned about the concrete wall being a blight, I don't think they're going to think a bridge over the Olowai is going to be a part of the scenic view plane.
Well, I know that's a concern for a number of neighborhoods in that area because they don't want a lot of the traffic from Waikiki going into their neighborhoods because there are parking issues.
Yeah, that would make everything Waikiki, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and plus the view plane. It would ruin the view plane to have bridges over the Olowai. There's a proposal for six bridges over the Olowai, and they would pertain that they would want the one over University to be first so we could have all the traffic going all the time. You know, instead of just containing it. There's no bridge prospects with your plans, are there, that you know of?
No.
Thank you.
No, although we have been approached by the city county. I think they're in the process of doing some of that planning in that area. And the general idea was, they asked us for our opinion on it.
Uh-huh.
We said for the purposes of constructing a flood wall, it wouldn't be an issue for us. We would just have to integrate the flood wall into whatever their footing is should a bridge be constructed. But it's not an issue for us.
We do have another caller, another shy caller from Maui. He's no longer on the line, but he left us with a question. He's wondering, with the sea rise levels, are we contemplating the beach and erosion in the plan? Do you know?
Well, we took a close look at sea level rise as a result of this. And the big concern is, what does the future hold for the water levels in the canal? Because if the water rises in the canal and then you add floodwaters on top of that, is the wall that you have in the future going to be large enough? Or is it going to be overtop more frequently and not necessarily provide as much protection? And so it's been designed to date with sea level rise in mind. Really what we did is we looked at three different scenarios, a low, medium, and high scenario at 2025, at 2075, and at 2125. So we're looking out 100 years into the future. And we made our own projections. They're different than what NOAA came out with, I think, about a month after we completed our work.
Oh, really? How different is it?
Well, I think NOAA's are a little bit more conservative, but we're projecting just for – we take the intermediate scenario for design purposes, and we're looking at about 2.5 feet of sea level rise by 2075 and just under 4 feet of sea level rise for 2125. So that's a significant amount of sea level rise, maybe not as much as NOAA might predict, but it's still a significant amount of sea level rise either way. And I think what's interesting in all of this is there's going to have to be a decision made about Waikiki in the future. What's it going to be in 100 years? Are you going to relocate that entire area somewhere else, move it, Maka, or are you going to try to protect it in place? And I think there's some major infrastructure and public policy decisions that would have to be made on that at a local level. But what we've said is that the flood wall will actually serve a benefit in the future, 100 years from now.
Right.
It will protect that entire Maka side of the canal from sea level rise. So in essence, it becomes morphs from a flood wall into actually a seawall in the future.
Wow.
Yeah, to protect those areas. So
they can make it like Miami and just have the water shooting back in.
Right.
Well, I guess it's something to think about because you live.
I'm also gone to the Webb Cedar meetings.
Right, right.
Waikiki Beach.
But
yeah.
Your home where you live then
right.
could be underwater.
Right. Well, I won't be around. So.
But it's a scary thought, though, if you live in that area.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and what's interesting is the coastline is actually higher in elevation than the canal side.
Right.
And so when you look at flooding from a sea level rise perspective, if we were to do nothing, build no wall or anything like that, and the sea level rises, the flooding is going to happen on the canal side before it actually inundates the coastline, just because the elevations are lower, and that's basically just how it was constructed. So that flood wall there provides you extra time to reinforce your coastline if that's the public policy decision that's made to protect Waikiki.
So at some point, I imagine you'll be sitting down again with the state and the city and county about this project. I mean, I don't know.
That's right.
With the news about the funding, I'm sure they have lots of questions. Have they reached out to you already?
Oh, absolutely. We've had discussions with folks at both the state and the city county. Like I say, unfortunately, we don't have all the details yet about how we'll move forward with things, so it's hard to communicate that to the state and city county. We hope to have guidance from our headquarters in the near future, and once we do, we'll be able to have those types of conversations with the state and the city county and decide who's really going to be the partner on this. Will it be one entity or both entities together, and how are we going to move forward with this?
You did mention the cost-sharing issue and the payment plan. You would have to have, I believe, payment in like 30 years or something, where they would pay back their share?
Yeah, that's right. That's the really interesting thing about this cost share arrangement, which is, like I say, completely new for us. It basically gives us all our federal funding up front, $345 million in hand, and then that 35% that would be paid back by the non-federal entity would be paid back over the course of 30 years. So it's basically like getting a federal loan and then having to pay that loan back over time, which is a new concept for us. So again, it muddies the water even further as to what the details are and how does this arrangement all work.
So the Army Corps has not had a project ever where they've had to work out that arrangement?
Well, there was a time back in, you know, before the 80s where we used to fund things 100% federal. That's more or less gone away. And now everything is cost shared, 65%, 35% for the most part. And so it's just a question of when is that non-federal money required? And this allows the state or the city county to basically come to the table, get the project complete, get it in the ground, which is the urgency here, to try to mitigate flood disaster events, and then slowly pay back that investment over time.
Where do you start first? You start with the retention basins up top?
Yeah, that's the general idea, is that you want to start with the upper watershed detention. Because if you build a wall and then you get the massive flood event and you don't have the detention, then your wall could get overtopped and things could be worse. Mm-hmm. So, excuse me, you really want to start with the detention in the upper watershed, get that constructed, then move down to the wall.
And Linda, have you heard anything from the communities up above there in the watershed area about what are the concerns they might have with these basins?
They're confused and they would like more information because they don't, like, I got two or three emails about different kinds of detentions and how many detentions. They actually think there's a plan that would make the golf course 9 holes instead of 18 because of detention basins. So that's how muddy the waters are. They really, and I got two different emails. There was one in Newsweek or an online Newsweek as far as but I think it was the real Newsweek that it was, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And what did that article say?
About detention basins in the Alawai, in the golf course. We made Newsweek, you know, and we don't even know it. About detention, flood mitigation at the Alawai golf course. And so there was that one. And then they both came out about the same time in another one. And so there was mass confusion, and then there was also Top Golf going on at the same time, the digital golf, and it's going to be huge. So that major thing is going on.
So that's a proposal for a new vendor over there,
right,
at the Alawai Golf Course.
It's sort of going through.
Right. So I guess the question is then, it sounds like the community wants to know more.
Right.
Is there an opportunity then that they will be able to meet face-to-face with you and have some of their questions addressed?
Absolutely. What we'll have to do, one of the first things that we'll have to do is put together a communication plan for how are we going to get information out to the community to make people aware.
The board would like a presentation, or I'm pretty sure.
Right. And we have, you know, we'll have state and or city county personnel on board as well to help with that. So we'll put together a communication strategy. And then there'll be a way that we'll let everyone know, here's when you're going to receive updates, and here's the progress of the status of the project as things move forward.
Was the Newsweek article sort of true?
No, I think the Newsweek article was accurate. They actually interviewed me for it. I didn't have my name in there, but I was interviewed for it. And my recollection was most of that was really tailored towards how the city, county, and Waikiki in particular was struggling with climate change issues. But, yes, some of the components of the Alawai project were mentioned in that. And I agree, there is some confusion over exactly what's going to happen at the golf
course.
They're
very confused. The community that comes to the neighborhood board are very confused, the golfers.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that we came up with a plan that involves the golf course. In working with the state and the city county. But I know that the Board of Water Supply also has a plan for the golf course. And ultimately, those two plans are going to have to be reconciled somehow, some way. And we haven't had that conversation yet.
And I know the EPA has been kind of looking at the Alawai project as well, just because of all the stuff that comes down there. You've got the heavy metals and the chemicals from the termite treatment from decades ago, and so it's just a polluted waterway, and they have concerns about cleaning that up. And I do recall when I was in Paris recently, they had canals that they were actually using and opening up for swimming, and they did something to clean the canals there. You know, they dredged their canals to the point where they were clean enough to use again, which is really remarkable.
Wonderful.
So I don't know if that's even possible here, but it's certainly something, you know, you look at what's going on across the globe and what efforts are being made toward that? I want to know more about that, actually.
Right, right. And, you know, I know that there's water quality investments being made in the watershed right now, and I can leave that to the water quality experts to kind of address how that works. But I will say one of the benefits of detention in the upper watershed is when you slow down the water, you don't have as much erosion, you don't have as much scour, you don't have as much transport of those materials down into the canal that you would otherwise. So we're looking at that as a benefit, and it's not an intended benefit of the project, but it's just one of those things that happens as a secondary benefit of having the detention in the watershed.
And we've just got a little time left. Do you have about 30 seconds? Final thoughts?
Is there a news feed or some avenue that we can keep up on developments or learn what's going transpiring or ask questions? Or is there some avenue of communication we can subscribe to?
Right. Well, the best source of information right now for the federal project is actually on our website, and I can make sure that the folks here at HPR get a link to that.
Okay.
But it's the Honolulu District of the Corps of Engineers, and from that website you can go to the Alawai Canal Project. And we have a number of documents posted up there, the final feasibility study and the EIS and all that information.
Okay. We would like to thank our guests, Kite Baccaro, Executive Director of Sustainable Coastlines, Michael Wyatt, Chief of the Civil Public Works Branch of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Linda Wong, Neighborhood Board Member and resident of the area. And mahalo to you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the Talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the Conversation.